The grace that brooks no barriers. The author of this article, Sri C.R. Rajamani, presented the following talk at the April 25th Aradhana program at Arunachala Ashrama in New York City. He and his wife are visiting their son, Dr. C.R. Ramakrishna of Stony Brook, New York. I have been a devotee of Bhagavan Sri Ramana Maharishi for over 55 years. I was in my early 20s when I first had his darshan. The event is still fresh in my memory, not because I was at that stage so mature, which I was not, but because of a very remarkable incident I saw on that occasion. I went to the ashrama in the early 40s. When the Second World War was at its peak and our own independence movement was also at its maximum intensity. I am not certain about the date or the month of my visit. It may have been December or January. I remember the season was quite cool. The summit of the holy Arunachala was shrouded in dense mists and clouds. The morning air was crisp and pleasant. It was in the original small hall that is remembered by the early devotees with justifiable fondness that I first saw Sri Bhagavan seated on a raised platform. A cast iron charcoal brazier was radiating a comfortable warmth and a pleasing aroma of the incense thrown into it at regular intervals was pervading the entire hall. About 30 people, comprised of men, women, and a few egg boys, were seated on the floor facing Sri Bhagavan. None spoke or even whispered between themselves. What struck me was no one showed even an inclination to talk. Some were meditating with closed eyes. The silence was definitely not an imposed one. Sri Bhagavan, his body luminous like burnished gold, was sparsely clad in his usual kaupinam and a small towel across his chest. He appeared to be occasionally dozing off and had to steady his head often. He frequently stretched his palms over the fire and massaged his long fingers. In spite of his apparent dozing, his eyes did not look drowsy. On the contrary, they were extraordinarily bright and alert. He was not looking at anybody in particular, nor were his eyes roaming about the hall in idle curiosity. Although my first impression was not a very uplifting one, I felt I was in the presence of an extremely affable person with a lot of natural grace, at perfect ease and without any pretension whatsoever. I was, however, aware of an effortless peace in the hall. I saw a white-skinned boy, a foreigner of about 10 years, sitting a couple of feet to my left. Next to him was a white man, presumably his father. Further to my left, beyond the central aisle, was a white woman, whom I thought was the boy's mother. I then saw Sri Bhagavan's eyes alight on the boy for a brief minute. I thought it was just a casual look. The boy was all the time looking at Sri Bhagavan with a sort of fixation, as if on the verge of asking a question. But no, he broke into tears. A cascade of tears came gushing out of his eyes. They were not tears of pain, for his face was radiant with joy. In temples, I have seen adults shedding tears in ecstasy and had myself experienced that type of joyous outpouring on hearing a beautiful hymn or a moving melody, but I had never seen a 10-year-old boy from a far off land, exhibiting this type of beautiful expression in an extremely quiet and serene atmosphere. I could see that Sri Bhagavan's glance, though only resting on him for a brief moment, had opened in the boy's heart a veritable reservoir of pure joy. I did not feel a remorse for my lack of receptivity that I ought to have felt, but I felt most fortunate to see a boy, not even half my age, showing such an alert sensitivity. The flat feeling I had experienced earlier was washed away by the joyous tears of another. I really felt blessed in an indirect way. Direct or indirect, blessing is blessing. Whenever I recall this incident, it creates a feeling of being very near to something truly divine. Of course, I have had my own share of Sri Bhagavan's grace in my later years. I have also had some ever-fresh visions which I dare not devalue as creations of a fevered imagination, for they have strengthened my faith in Sri Bhagavan. Some of them occurred decades after Sri Bhagavan's Mahanirvana. They have been firm confirmations of his continued presence and reassurances of his immortal words. They say, "I am going. Where can I go? I am always here." Now, returning to that first day at the ashrama, I learned that the boy had come along with his parents, both of them theosophists. The Theosophical Society's World Convention is usually held at their international headquarters at Adyar, Madras, in December, January. Some of the people from foreign countries choose to visit Sri Ramanashramam at that time. The boy's parents arranged a trip to Tiruvannamalai, but he stoutly refused to go with them as he was not in tune with conditions in India, which can never be adequate when compared with the posh amenities of his native Australia. However, he changed his mind at the last moment and did make the trip. Within an hour of his face-to-face meeting with Sri Bhagavan, his mental barriers were reduced to nothingness. He shed tears for quite some time and later said to his mother, "I am so happy. I don't want to leave his presence. I want to be always with him." His mother was most upset. She pleaded with Sri Bhagavan, "Swami, please release my son. He is our only child. We will be miserable without him." Sri Bhagavan smiled at her and said, "Release him? I am not keeping him tied up. He is a mature soul. A mere spark has ignited his spiritual fire." So, that casual look was a spark of tremendous power. Turning to the boy, he said, "Go with your parents. I will always be with you." He spoke in Tamil throughout, but the boy understood him fully. He bowed to Sri Bhagavan and reluctantly left with his parents, immensely rich with their newly found spiritual treasure.